Good evening, everyone. My name is Ben Hunt, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober today by the grace of God, good sponsorship, and meetings similar to this since January 18th of 2004. I'd like to thank Dave for asking me to come share. Tonight I'm going to share in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I grew up in Jamestown, North Dakota. That's what I always thought, but I got four other brothers. I had two parents. My mom recently moved to Memphis a few years ago, and I don't know if I grew up feeling like I was out of place until probably about the age of five. At the age of five, I got my eye poked out by my great-grandma with a little plastic dart with some needles stuck in it because I was playing a game. I put some needles in the dart, and I got my eye poked out. But anyways, to make a long story short, that's when I first started to kind of create my first lies, and that's when I first kind of started to kind of create this other image other than what was real, because people would ask me the story, what happened, and I just got tired of telling it, so I started making a story up of how my eye actually got poked out. And you know, I was a little bit taller than the other kids, and I did start to feel a little bit of a separation then. I excelled at school. I got put in the classes early in the morning for the talented and gifted, and in the third grade I got kicked out of those classes for cheating on a science test. One of the other nerds that was in my early morning classes with me told me it was an open book test, so I started using my book for the test, and Miss Thompson caught me cheating. It made me help the janitor for the week after school, and I was a little bit bitter about that. That was my first real hardcore resentment towards her, and I kind of got some attention for that, though, because there's Ben helping the butt out, the janitor, every night after school, and I've always liked to get attention one shape, form, or another, and I kind of, from that moment on, found out that it's a lot easier to get the negative attention than it is to get the good attention, and I kind of rolled with that. Back at Roosevelt Elementary, if you got in trouble, you had to stand with your nose to the brick wall in the lunchroom while everyone walked past you in line to go get their lunch trays. And oh, as the years went on, I was up there more and more often. And I really didn't seem to mind. You just stand there, your nose to the wall, you can kind of see everyone through the corner of your eye, and they're laughing, they're pointing. It was like, you know, I don't know. I liked the attention, and that kind of started to become the people that I hung around with. I had always traipsed around with my older brother, Chris, and got in a lot of trouble. Actually, I think Chris and Chad B. from the group here was my first resentment towards God, and I was riding my bike with training wheels on it, and we were putting black skid marks on the sidewalk, and the preacher came and caught us. Well, those two were big enough so they could pedal away, but the preacher got a hold of me, and all I can remember is this might not happen this way, but the preacher was cussing me out, and I was bawling, pedaling my little bike away from the scene. And ever since then, I kind of, you know, after doing my four step, I kind of came up with that's the conclusion where I just kind of asked, well, if that's what those religious folks are about, I don't want nothing to do with it. And that was kind of my idea on organized religion all the way through. I thought that the, you know, little stories that they give you in Sunday school were a bunch of made, drummed up stuff by these people, these weirdos, and, you know, people parting Red Seas and all this other crap happened. I just wasn't buying into it. And, you know, growing up through high school and through grade school as a kid, I started to grow out a mullet. I had a mullet. I was wearing Miller hats, a shirt, a Kiss t-shirt. I made my mom take me to a Kiss concert when I was 12 years old because she wouldn't let me go by myself. She had to come with me. And you know, I was just kind of starting to distance myself from everybody else in the real world. But, you know, I always felt like I had a lot of friends. I excelled at a lot of sports. Christy was talking about being in swimming. I was in swimming, too, from a very early age. And I was doing well. I was actually state champion when I was 11. And I think the next year afterwards, a group of people were talking about swimming being not as cool as I thought it was. And I just quit. You know, I wanted people to think highly of me. And I would do anything to gain your acceptance and your approval. And that would later to become one of my more crippling handicaps, like Lurvik was talking about. I just kind of started to be a chameleon. Whatever you want me to be, I'd be it. And growing up, I've gotten in a lot more trouble through high school, getting into fist fights and stuff like that, getting kicked out of classes, just being a regular jerk to teachers, anybody about me. I'd like to pick on the kids who are less fortunate in high school and just kind of be a jerk to everyone around me because I never felt equal to. I was either better than or less than you. And I never knew I was alcoholic. Now, looking back, I believe I was destined to be alcoholic long before I ever took my first drink. Me and my older brother had a 300-plus beer can collection we made. Our dad gets forced me to buy different types of beer so we can build this big shrine of empty beer cans. And I was like at the age of 7, 8 years old. And first drinks, I would steal drinks from the basement of our house. I'd mix drinks up, take a few drinks with along the paper route. Never drank enough to get drunk while I was doing the paper route. But I can always tell that the second half of the paper route went much better than the first did. Finally, when I was age of 12, 13, running around with my older brother Chris is where I drank enough to get drunk. It was Black Velvet. I went to a house party. They're playing this card game over there where you drink a lot, and my brother allotted me like 5 or 6 beers. I ran out of those, and someone had some Black Velvet whiskey, so I just started supplementing the whiskey instead of the beer, and I didn't know that whiskey was stronger than beer at the time, so I was just drinking this stuff like it was, you know, just like a regular beer, and found myself puking out in the front lawn of the house party, puking up blood. I later realized after being AA that the black stuff that you throw up is blood. I passed out, I blacked out, and I swore to God I'd never drink that night. I remember actually saying that, I swore to God I'd never drink. But in a short period of time that night, I felt like I was the party. I felt absolutely comfortable in my own skin. I felt the way I thought I should feel for a long time. And at the time, I wouldn't have gone and told you I was restless, irritable, and discontent with my life and the people in it, but it just made me feel like I've always wanted to feel, and I felt absolutely beautiful. And from that moment on, started the obsession that someday, somehow, I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking. And I mixed things up, you know, started drinking beer on the weekends, and just really had a good time. I had a blast. 90% of my drinking career was an absolute blast. I loved every minute of it, and I'd do it again, you know. And drinking just kind of went on like that. I got my first arrest when I was 17, and that was the first of probably about 24 arrests. And the consequences aren't what gets guys like me sober. They're just they're part of the gig. And over a period of time, my my mind won't pull up the memories of what happened last month. You know, I go out with the idea that that's not going to happen again. In 1999, I ended up getting my girlfriend pregnant. We had a baby boy named Austin, and this is where I started my first attempts to really try to buckle down and control my drinking. And I'd be able to keep things together for, you know, the week, and then we'd ship Austin off to the grandparents, and it'd be it'd be all out on the weekends, and I'd behave for short periods of time. But when it was game on, it was game on, and I later eventually ended up leaving that situation. I got arrested for domestic violence, which I'm not proud of. It's just it's one of those things that happened. And, I don't even know how I got myself in that situation because I was never going to be that guy. I was never going to be that guy that hit the woman that I was with. But it's one of the many things that happened of the list that I had of things that I was not going to do in life. And I crossed that one out. And after I left her, I kind of had nobody or nothing telling me what I could and couldn't do anymore, and that's how I like to do things. I've pretty much been on my own as far as parental guidance. My parents didn't ask where I was at from the age of 12. I can go out and be gone for the weekend, and it's, you know, no big deal. But so I was back to just Ben left with his own devices, and I could drink the way I wanted to drink. And the way I started drinking then was pretty much every day, every chance I can get to. And this is when I found out that to avoid hangovers, just start drinking. I seen a sign hanging in a bar in Windsor. It's a small town to the west of Jamestown that said, avoid hangovers, stay drunk. And I was like, that makes sense. So I'd be the guy waking up at the parties still there from the night before, and I'd just crawl into the fridge and start drinking again. It only took a few to get right back in the saddle, and I felt good. You know, I'm just do anything to make myself comfortable in my own skin. But this is also about the time where I ran into drugs. Drugs was one of those things that one of my nevers. I always looked down on people who did drugs in high school, and I wasn't going to be one of those guys. And I started becoming a pretty regular user of cocaine and meth just to balance out my drinking. And I could drink like the way I used to drink on that stuff for a short period of time. I could drink like I was 17 again, and it worked well, and I think it kind of helped me get here a little bit earlier than I normally would have had I not done the stuff. But I drank like that and did those things for a few more years, and going to parties. I used to run with Ben P here, and our idea of a good time is boarding ourselves up in the jungle room for a week, staying up straight and drinking. I'd go to work and still be up for the whole time, and you know, that was our idea of a good time. And I was looking for guys like Ben to go drinking with, guys who drank like that, guys who wanted to go on the 3-, 4-, 5-day runs. But I started to experience a lot of pain in my side. My liver was starting to deteriorate, and I went to the clinic to get put on Anaboost because I thought I feared for my life. I wanted to stop drinking. I knew I couldn't do it on my own willpower, so I went in the clinic, and the doctor told me I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous for treatment, and I wasn't going to do either one of the two because I've watched Sandra Bullock in 28 days. I wasn't going to stand in a circle and chant, so where I was at that point in time is full flight from reality, like the books talks about, and you know, I was living only for one might say to drink, and at that point in time, I walked out of the doctor's office. I didn't care if I died drunk. I kind of thought it'd be fitting. You know, I thought it was my role in life is to drink myself to death, and that's what I tried to do. I went on a run after that for about 50 days in the bars, pretty much any time they were open or they let me in, and I ran into this girl, and for some reason, I tried to sober up for this girl. I'd keep things together for about 3 weeks, and after 3 weeks, I'd be restless, irritable, discontent. I didn't know what was wrong with me, but what was going on right here, right now, wasn't it. So I needed to go do something else, and that happened over and over for about a year, and I tried to keep things together for her, which eventually wound me up breaking up with her. And my last drunk before I went into treatment, I was either going to kill myself or go into treatment, and that was a big debate for me to do. I was just kind of strung out, and I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. I didn't know how to get out of this mess, and I was either going to go to treatment or I was going to kill myself. And I called her up, asked her if she'd give me a ride to treatment, and she said that she would the next day, because I called like a year prior after that whole Anaboost deal, and they said, I called them up and said I need to go to treatment, and they said, well, can it wait till Wednesday? And I said yes and hung up the phone, and by Wednesday I completely forgot about me needing me going to any treatment. So I went to treatment. I tried to, you know, I paid attention to treatment. I had an honest desire to stop drinking at the time, and out of treatment, I was doing the same things with the same people, and eventually, 3 weeks out of treatment, I was drunk again, and not knowing why or how this happened. And I have always absolutely convinced that if I stayed sober for a month or longer, that I'd regain some type of control of my drinking, and I didn't. It was just as worse. It was just as bad, if not worse, than what it was when I stopped. And that's where I had a few more incidents like that after treatment, and that's where I stumbled across Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy who I used to party with said he's going to go to a meeting, and we went to check out a meeting, and then I kind of felt pretty comfortable at the meetings at the clubhouse there, and he said, we're going to go to this Monday night group, and I heard about the Monday night group in Jamestown, which is the Buffalo City group, which is now meets on Thursday nights, but he said there's a bunch of young guys who run around in suits and ties and are really active. And this was just about as distasteful to me at the same time as Sandra Bullock standing in a circle chanting. And I thought, you know, what the heck, we'll go check it out. And went and checked it out, and everybody was just like everyone is here now. You know, shaking your hand, they're talking to you, you know, they're talking about alcoholism. I related with all the speakers that night. I thought that someone gave them my life story and handed up there here to talk about this stuff. And I kept coming back, and I got a suit and tie. I was type of guy. I've never wore a suit and tie in my life until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't plan on doing it because I'm way too cool to be running around in a suit and tie. But I seen that everyone else looked good. They seemed to have something that I did not have, so I figured, what the hell, I'll give it a try. And told me to get a sponsor. I had no idea what a sponsor was. I didn't know that I wanted one. My only clue what sponsorship was in auto racing. I was just really that dense on the whole subject. And I think, all right, I'll get a sponsor. And Jeff told me that, you know, gave me the rundown what the deal was. And that next week, and I was going on to a snowmobile race, the World Championship Ice Ovals up in Wisconsin. And there was a roundup, the District 6 roundup in Jamestown at the same time. And And Jeff advised me not to go to the snowmobile race, and I was like, yeah, whatever. And I went to the snowmobile race. My first call time with my sponsor, I'm standing on top of the VIP suite, the Skidoo box, drinking a beer, talking to my sponsor. And that weekend, I drank for 3 days straight. I had honest intentions not to drink that weekend either. I told all my friends I was going with that I'm going to these meetings now, and I'm not going to drink. And one of the guys that was going with us was actually going to be a half an hour or 45 minutes late. And so I said, well, let's just go to the office bar and wait for him to get off work. And next thing you know, I'm on a three-day run. But that run ended up being my last run. And the whole time when I was drinking, it was just like, I knew I could no longer keep it up. Alcohol was no longer producing the same effect that it did. And I was miserable while drunk. I didn't get here because of consequences. I didn't get here because I'm a nice guy. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because alcohol stopped working for me. And I wanted to find some way how to live, because the way I'm living it is I'm trying to kill myself slowly, day in, day out. I'm trying to take myself out of the game. And started working the steps, started meeting with Jeff, started going through the book. And I did not believe in God at this time. I was kind of, like I said, I was full flight from reality when I got here. I didn't even notice God in the steps or God in the prayers or anything, really, for the first couple months. And as a result of working the steps, as a result of doing my fourth and fifth step, I had a spiritual experience that there must be a God. So I started believing in God, and I started to pray to that God. And life started getting good. I got a large contract doing an automotive dealership in Jamestown, a remodeling job, and you know, things were starting to happen to me that things that shouldn't happen to guys like me. My relationships with my friends started getting better, started making money, and I don't know, I just started to become more and more comfortable. It started to feel like I kind of had a place in this world, or a sense, or a purpose anyways. And I went on a lot of roundups in my first year. I think I went on 6 or 7 roundups in my first year. And roundups are absolutely, one of the keys, one of the backbones, too, to my early recovery is going to those roundups, because I was convinced in my mind that I was bigger and badder than these people that were in my home group. I just figured these guys didn't really drink that much, and I don't know, I wasn't really quite convinced, but after hearing of some of the speakers at these roundups, one of the guys from L.A., I was like, if that guy can lower his ego, come into Alcoholics Anonymous and do these things, there's no reason why I can't. And, I just love hearing people's stories. I just absolutely love it. And I started working the steps and started making some of my amends to some of the people about me, because I'm the type of guy, my amends list is huge, and I'm the type of guy who, if you came into contact with me prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, I left you worse off. I was a taker in every sense of the form, and I got a lot of work to do with amends. Financial amends is a huge one for me. I came into this program probably about $60,000 down to people I owe money to, and as a result of a self-will run riot in the program in sobriety, of well, better than doubled that in just in the last year. So I'm going to need to, I got a lot of areas to work on. Money is one of my worst deals. I always thought if I had money, I'd feel better. And I had a lot of money in sobriety. I've had more than I ever thought I'd ever have at one point in time, but I'm no good with it. I spend it like water. It's like hot potato. As soon as you get rid of it. And I got a long ways to go with in that department, but my relationship with my my son has been one of the keys to the reason why at first kept coming back here, because my relationship with my son keeps getting better and better. I'm starting slowly to rebuild a relationship with my mom. My mom, who was a person I disowned for about 8 years, I kicked her out of her own house when she left my dad. I told her that she could leave, and she did. And I'd see her on the streets. So I'd be working on job sites right next to where she lived, and she'd come up and talk to me, and I'd brush her off. And the people who were working on her crew would ask, "Who was that?" I was like, "Well, that was my mom." And they're like, "Okay." But this person I haven't talked to for 8 years, kind of disowned, kind of, whatever. I flew down to Florida with my son, and we visited with her for a little bit. I wrote her a letter at first and kind of explained that, I was wrong. You had every right to do what you did, and I was wrong. And that's a lot of what my experience has been in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I was wrong, and there's a lot of it. But, I'm slowly working on that relationship, helping to build that back together. I'm trying to get things built back together for my dad, because my dad is, me and him have never seen eye to eye. And, before Alcoholics Anonymous, 2 years ago, my old man wouldn't have borrowed me a $20 bill. And last fall, when business was going to hell, he was willing to borrow me thousands and thousands of dollars. And that's a result of hanging around with you guys and being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But how much time do I got left? This has been absolutely the best thing that's ever happened to me by far, and it would have been the last thing I would have ever thought of. Alcoholics Anonymous was the last house on the block. I would have never guessed I'd be a member of it. I never guessed I'd been sober for 2 years and content with where I'm at. This thing that's happened with the business this last fall, guys like me blow my brains out over stuff like that. Guys like me don't stay sober going through the deal that I went through last fall. I just don't. I run from pain, and I run, I do whatever. I take the path of least resistance, and hanging around you guys and being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that you can walk through these things and things get better. So if you're new here tonight and you guys are in your first week of sobriety, well, I welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys that, get a sponsor and, do what's asked. Always say yes to AA requests. That's been one of the biggest things that's kept me in the game so far. Is you get asked to do something, say yes, I'll do it, and show up and make that commitment. Because without commitments to tie me here, I'm uncommitted. And if I'm uncommitted, I'll walk out the door. I'll find something else to do, for the time being. But get active. See if you can see who you can help instead of worrying about your own mess. Because worrying about your own mess really doesn't do too much good worrying about it, and try to start piecing things back together. And that's all I have tonight, and I'll pass. Good evening, everyone. My name is Ben Hunt, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober today by the grace of God, good sponsorship, and meetings similar to this since January 18th of 2004. I'd like to thank Dave for asking me to come share. Tonight I'm going to share in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I grew up in Jamestown, North Dakota. that's what I always thought. But I got four other brothers. I had two parents. My mom recently moved to Memphis a few years ago. And I don't know if I grew up feeling like I was out of place until probably about the age of five. At the age of five, I got my eye poked out by my great-grandma with a little plastic dart with some needles stuck in it, because I was playing a game. I put some needles in the dart, and I got my eye poked out. But anyways, to make a long story short, that's when I first started to kind of create my first lies, and that's when I first kind of started to kind of create this other image other than what was real, because people would ask me the story, what happened, and I just got tired of telling it, so I started making a story up of how my eye actually got poked out. And I was a little bit taller than the other kids, and I did start to feel a little bit of a separation then. I excelled at school. I got put in the classes early in the morning for the talented and gifted, and in the third grade I got kicked out of those classes for cheating on a science test. One of the other nerds that was in my early morning classes with me told me it was an open book test, so I started using my book with the test, and Miss Thompson caught me cheating. Made me help the janitor for the week after school, and I was a little bit bitter about that. That was my first real real hardcore resentments towards her, and I kind of got some attention for that, though, because there's Ben helping the butt out, the janitor, every night after school, and I've always liked to get attention one shape, form, or another, and I kind of, from that moment on, found out that it's a lot easier to get the negative attention than it is to get the good attention, and I kind of rolled with that. Back at Roosevelt Elementary, if you got in trouble, you had to stand with your nose to the brick wall in the lunchroom while everyone walked past you in line to go get their lunch trays. And as the years went on, I was up there more and more often. And I really didn't seem to mind. You stand there, your nose to the wall, you can kind of see everyone through the corner of your eye, and they're laughing, they're pointing. It was like, I don't know. I liked the attention, and that kind of started to become the people that I hung around with. I had always traipsed around with my older brother, Chris, and got in a lot of trouble. Actually, I think Chris and Chad B. from the group here was my first resentment towards God. And I was riding my bike with training wheels on it, and we were putting black skid marks on the sidewalk, and the preacher came and caught us. Well, those two were big enough so they can pedal away, but the preacher got a hold of me, and all I can remember is this might have not happened this way, but the preacher was cussing me out, and I was bawling, pedaling my little bike away from the scene. And ever since then, I kind of, after doing my four step, I kind of came up with that's the conclusion where I just kind of asked, well, if that's what those religious folks are about, I don't want nothing to do with it. And that was kind of my idea on organized religion all the way through. I thought that the little stories that they give you in Sunday school were a bunch of made, drummed up stuff by these people, these weirdos, and people parting Red Seas and all this other crap happened. I just wasn't buying into it. And growing up through high school and through grade school as a kid, I started to grow out a mullet. I had a mullet. I was wearing Miller hats, a shirt, a Kiss t-shirt. I made my mom take me to a Kiss concert when I was 12 years old because she wouldn't let me go by myself. She had to come with me. And I was just kind of starting to distance myself from everybody else in the real world. But I always felt like I had a lot of friends. I excelled at a lot of sports. Christy was talking about being in swimming. I was in swimming, too, from a very early age, and I was doing well. I was actually state champion when I was 11, and I think the next year afterwards, a group of people were talking about swimming being not as cool as I thought it was, and I just quit. I wanted people to think highly of me, and I would do anything to gain your acceptance and your approval, and that would later to become one of my more crippling handicaps, like Lurvik was talking about. I just kind of started to be a chameleon. Whatever you want me to be, I'd be it. And growing up, I've gotten in a lot more trouble through high school, getting into fist fights and stuff like that, getting kicked out of classes, just being a regular jerk to teachers, anybody about me. I'd like to pick on the kids who are less fortunate in high school and just kind of be a jerk to everyone around me because I never felt equal to. I was either better than or less than you. And I never knew I was alcoholic. Now, looking back, I believe I was destined to be alcoholic long before I ever took my first drink. Me and my older brother had a 300-plus beer can collection we made our dad get us, forced me to buy different types of beer so we can build this big shrine of empty beer cans. And I was at the age of 7, 8 years old. And drinks, I would steal drinks from the basement of our house. I'd mix drinks up, take a few drinks with along the paper route. Never drank enough to get drunk while I was doing the paper route, but I can always tell that the second half of the paper route went much better than the first did. Finally, when I was age of 12, 13, running around with my older brother Chris is where I drank enough to get drunk. It was Black Velvet. I went to a house party. They're playing this card game over there where you drink a lot, and my brother allotted me 5 or 6 beers. I ran out of those, and someone had some Black Velvet whiskey, so I just started supplementing the whiskey instead of the beer, and I didn't know that whiskey was stronger than beer at the time, so I was just drinking this stuff it was just like a regular beer. And I found myself puking out in the front lawn of the house party, puking up blood. I later realized after being AA that the black stuff that you throw up is blood. I passed out, I blacked out, and I swore to God I'd never drink that night. I remember actually saying that, I swore to God I'd never drink. But in a short period of time that night, I felt like I was the party. I felt absolutely comfortable in my own skin. I felt the way I thought I should feel for a long time. And at the time, I wouldn't have gone and told you I was restless, irritable, and discontent with my life and the people in it. But it just made me feel like I've always wanted to feel, and I felt absolutely beautiful. And from that moment on, started the obsession that someday, somehow, I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking. And I mixed things up, started drinking beer on the weekends, and just really had a good time. I had a blast. 90% of my drinking career was an absolute blast. I loved every minute of it, and I'd do it again, And drinking just kind of went on like that. I got my first arrest when I was 17, and that was the first of probably about 24 arrests. And the consequences aren't what gets guys like me sober. They're just they're part of the gig. And over a period of time, my my mind won't pull up the memories of what happened last month. I go out with the idea that that's not going to happen again. In 1999, I ended up getting my girlfriend pregnant. We had a baby boy named Austin, and This is where I started my first attempts to really try to buckle down and control my drinking. And I'd be able to keep things together for, you know, the week, and then we'd ship Austin off to the grandparents, and it'd be, it'd be all out on the weekends, and I'd behave for short periods of time. But when it was game on, it was game on. And I later eventually ended up leaving that situation. I got arrested for domestic violence, which I'm not proud of. It's just it's one of those things that happened, and I don't even know how I got myself in that situation, because I was never going to be that guy. I was never going to be that guy that hit the woman that I was with. But it's one of the many things that happened of the list that I had on things that I was not going to do in life, and I crossed that one out. And after I left her, I kind of had nobody or nothing telling me what I could and couldn't do anymore, and that's how I like to do things. I've pretty much been on my own as far as parental guidance. My parents didn't ask where I was at. From the age of 12, I can go out and be gone for the weekend, and it's, you know, no big deal. So I was back to just Ben left with his own devices, and I could drink the way I wanted to drink. And the way I started drinking then was pretty much every day, every chance I can get to. And this is when I found out that to avoid hangovers, just start drinking. I seen a sign hanging in a bar in Windsor. It's a small town to the west of Jamestown that said, "Avoid hangovers, stay drunk." And I was like, that makes sense. So I'd be the guy waking up at the parties still there from the night before, and I'd just crawl into the fridge and start drinking again. It only took a few to get right back in the saddle, and I felt good. You know, I'm just do anything to make myself comfortable in my own skin. But this is also about the time where I ran into drugs. Drugs was one of those things that one of my nevers. I always looked down on people who did drugs in high school, and I wasn't going to be one of those guys. And I started becoming a pretty regular user of cocaine and meth just to balance out my drinking. And I could drink like the way I used to drink on that stuff for a short period of time. I could drink like I was 17 again, and it worked well, and I think it kind of helped me get here a little bit earlier than I normally would have had I not done the stuff. But I drank like that and did those things for a few more years, and going to parties. I used to run with Ben P here, and our idea of a good time is boarding ourselves up in the jungle room for a week, staying up straight and drinking. I'd go to work and still be up for the whole time, and that was our idea of a good time. And I was looking for guys like Ben to go drinking with, guys who drank like that, guys who wanted to go on the 3-4-5 day runs. But I started to experience a lot of pain in my side. My liver was starting to deteriorate, and I went to the clinic to get put on Anaboost because I thought I feared for my life. I wanted to stop drinking. I knew I couldn't do it on my own willpower, so I went in the clinic, and the doctor told me I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous for treatment, and I wasn't going to do either one of the two because I've watched Sandra Bullock in 28 days. I wasn't going to stand in a circle and chant, so where I was at that point in time is full flight from reality, like the books talks about, and I was living only for one might say to drink, and at that point in time, I walked out of the doctor's office. I didn't care if I died drunk. I kind of thought it'd be fitting. You know, I thought it was my role in life is to drink myself to death, and that's what I tried to do. I went on a run after that for about 50 days in the bars, pretty much any time they were open or they let me in, and I ran into this girl, and for some reason, I tried to sober up for this girl. I'd keep things together for about 3 weeks, and after 3 weeks, I'd be restless, ear, and discontent. I didn't know what was wrong with me, but what was going on right here, right now, wasn't it, so I needed to go do something else, and that happened over and over for about a year, and I tried to keep things together for her, which eventually wound me up breaking up with her, and my last drunk before I went into treatment, I was either going to kill myself or go into treatment, and that was a big debate for me to do. I was just kind of strung out, and I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. I didn't know how to get out of this mess, and I was either going to go to treatment or I was going to kill myself. And I called her up after she asked her if she'd give me a ride to treatment, and she said that she would the next day, because I called like a year prior after that whole Anaboost deal, and they said, I called them up and said I need to go to treatment. They said, "Well, can't wait till Wednesday," and I said yes and hung up the phone. And by Wednesday, I completely forgot about me needing me going to any treatment. So I went to treatment. I tried to, you know, I paid attention to treatment. I had an honest desire to stop drinking at the time, and out of treatment, I was doing the same things with the same people, and eventually, 3 weeks out of treatment, I was drunk again, and not knowing why or how this happened, and I have always absolutely convinced that if I stayed sober for a month or longer, that I'd regain some type of control with my drinking, and I didn't. It was just as worse, it was just as bad, if not worse, than what it was when I stopped, and that's where I had a few more incidents like that after treatment, and that's where I stumbled across Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy who I used to party with said he's going to go to a meeting, and we went to check out a meeting, and then I kind of felt pretty comfortable at the meetings at the clubhouse there, and he said, we're going to go to this Monday night group, and I heard about the Monday night group in Jamestown, which is the Buffalo City group, which is now meets on Thursday nights, but he said there's a bunch of young guys who run around in suits and ties and are really active. And this was just about as distasteful to me at the same time as Sandra Bullock standing in a circle chanting. And I thought, you know, what the heck, we'll go check it out. And went and checked it out, and everybody was just like everyone is here now. You know, shaking your hand, they're talking to you, you know, they're talking about alcoholism. I related with all the speakers that night. I thought that someone gave them my life story and handed up there here to talk about this stuff. And I kept coming back, and I got a suit and tie. I've never wore a suit and tie in my life until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't plan on doing it because I'm way too cool to be running around in a suit and tie. But I seen that everyone else looked good. They seemed to have something that I did not have, so I figured, what the hell, I'll give it a try. And told me to get a sponsor. I had no idea what a sponsor was. I didn't know that I wanted one. My only clue of what sponsorship was in auto racing. I was just really that dense on the whole subject. And I'm like, all right, I'll get a sponsor. And Jeff told me that, you know, gave me the rundown what the deal was. And that next weekend, I was going on to a snowmobile race, the World Championship Ice Ovals up in Wisconsin. And there was a roundup, the District 6 roundup in Jamestown at the same time. And Jeff advised me not to go to the snowmobile race. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I went to the snowmobile race. My first call time with my sponsor, I'm standing on top of the VIP suite, the Skidoo box, drinking a beer, talking to my sponsor. And that weekend, I drank for 3 days straight. I had honest intentions not to drink that weekend either. I told all my friends I was going with that I'm going to these meetings now and I'm not going to drink. And one of the guys that was going with us was actually going to be a half an hour or 45 minutes late. And so I said, well, let's just go to the office bar and wait for him to get off work. And next thing you know, I'm on a 3-day run. But that run ended up being my last run. And the whole time when I was drinking, it was just like, I knew I could no longer keep it up. Alcohol was no longer producing the same effect that it did. And I was miserable while drunk. I didn't get here because of consequences. I didn't get here because I'm a nice guy. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because alcohol stopped working for me. And I wanted to find some way how to live, because the way I'm living it is I'm trying to kill myself slowly, day in, day out. I'm trying to take myself out of the game. And started working the steps, started meeting with Jeff, started going through the book, and I did not believe in God at this time. I was kind of, like I said, I was full flight from reality when I got here. I didn't even notice God in the steps or God in the prayers or anything, really, for the first couple months. And as a result of working the steps, as a result of doing my fourth and fifth step, I had a spiritual experience that there must be a God. So I started believing in God, and I started to pray to that God, and life started getting good. I got a large contract doing an automotive dealership in Jamestown, a remodeling job, and you know, things were starting to happen to me that things that shouldn't happen to guys like me. My relationships with my friends started getting better, started making money, and I don't know, I just started to become more and more comfortable. I started to feel like I kind of had a place in this world, or a sense, or a purpose anyways. And I went on a lot of roundups in my first year. I think I went on 6 or 7 roundups in my first year. And the roundups are absolutely, you know, one of the keys, one of the backbones, too, to my early recovery is going to those roundups, because I was convinced in my mind that I was bigger and badder than these people that were in my home group. I just figured these guys didn't really drink that much, and I don't know, you know, I wasn't really quite convinced, but after hearing of some of the speakers at these roundups, one of the guys from L.A., I was like, if that guy can lower his ego, come into Alcoholics Anonymous and do these things, there's no reason why I can't. And, you know, I just love hearing people's stories. I just absolutely love it. And I started working the steps and started making some of my amends to some of the people about me, because I'm the type of guy, my amends list is huge, and I'm the type of guy who, if you came into contact with me prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, I left you better off, or I left you worse off. I was a taker in every sense of the form, and you know, I got a lot of work to do with amends. Financial amends is a huge one for me. I came into this program probably about $60,000 down to people I owe money to, and as a result of a self-will run riot in the program in sobriety of, well, better than doubled that in just in the last year. So I'm going to need to, you know, I got a lot of areas to work on. Money is one of my worst deals. I always thought if I had money, I'd feel better. And I had a lot of money in sobriety. I've had more than I ever thought I'd ever have at one point in time, but I'm no good with it. I spend it like water. It's like hot potato. As soon as you get rid of it. And like I said, I got a long ways to go with in that department. But you know, my relationship with my my son has been one of the keys to the reason why, you know, I at first kept coming back here, because my relationship with my son keeps getting better and better. I started slowly to rebuild a relationship with my mom. My mom, who was a person I disowned for about 8 years, I kicked her out of her own house when she left my dad. I told her that she could leave, and she did. And I'd see her on the street, so I'd be working on job sites right next to where she lived, and she'd come up and talk to me, and I'd brush her off, and the people who were working on her crew would ask, "Who was that?" I was like, "Well, that was my mom." And they're like, "Okay." But this person I haven't talked to for 8 years, kind of disowned, kind of, you know, whatever. I flew down to Florida with my son, and we visited her with her for a little bit. I wrote her a letter at first and kind of explained that, you know, I was wrong. You know, you had every right to do what you did, and I was wrong. And that's a lot of what my experience has been in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I was wrong, and there's a lot of it. But, you know, I'm slowly working on that relationship, helping to build that back together. I'm trying to get things built back together with my dad, because my dad is, you know, me and him have never seen eye to eye. And, you know, before Alcoholics Anonymous, 2 years ago, my old man wouldn't have borrowed me a $20 bill. And last fall, when business was going to hell, he was willing to borrow me thousands and thousands of dollars. And that's a result of hanging around with you guys and being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you're, how much time do I got left? But this has been absolutely the best thing that's ever happened to me by far, and it would have been the last thing I would ever thought of. Alcoholics Anonymous was the last house on the block. I would have never guessed I'd be a member of it. I never guessed I'd been sober for 2 years and content with where I'm at. This thing that's happened with the business this last fall, guys like me blow my brains out over stuff like that. Guys like me don't stay sober going through the deal that I went through last fall. I just don't. I run from pain, and I run, you know, I do whatever. I take the path of least resistance, and what hanging around you guys and being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that you know, you can walk through these things and things get better. So if you're new here tonight and you guys are in your first week of sobriety, well, I welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys that, you know, get a sponsor and, you know, do what's asked. Always say yes to AA requests. That's been one of the biggest things that's kept me in the game so far, is you get asked to do something, say yes, I'll do it, and show up and make that commitment, because without commitments to tie me here, I'm uncommitted, and if I'm uncommitted, I'll walk out the door. I'll find something else to do, you know, for the time being. But, you know, get active. See if you can see who you can help instead of worrying about your own mess, because worrying about your own mess really doesn't do too much good worrying about it, and try to start piecing things back together. And that's all I have tonight, and I'll pass.